Indigenous communities across the United States can demonstrate how the effects of climate change fall more heavily on their people. Everything from lessened fish runs to ground heaves caused by melting permafrost affect tribal members. So the tribes gathered to put out a report listing the impacts and the role tribes expect to take in finding solutions. The Institute for Tribal Environmental Professionals, ITEP, recently released the first STAC report. That's the acronym for Status of Tribes and Climate Change. It is more than a status report. It points out ways tribes want to and expect to participate in processes to curb and reverse climate change and buffer its impacts. We have two guests with us to talk about the STAC report. Anne-Marie Cicilli is the director of the Institute for Tribal and Environmental Professionals. Anne-Marie, welcome.
Good morning.
And have I pronounced your last name correctly?
You did. Thank you.
Okay, sure. Karen Cassetta was with us as well, the co-manager of the ITEP unit on tribes and climate change. Karen, welcome to you.
Yeah, thank you. Good morning.
Good to have you both here. Anne-Marie, if you can start us off, give us a bit of history on the Institute for Tribal Environmental Professionals and how long it's been around.
Thank you very much. So I come to you from Flagstaff, Arizona, and it's appropriate that I honor and do a line acknowledgement. These lands are sacred to 13 tribes in this region, so I would just want to say that up front and first. I am Diné, and I'm Navajo. I'm of the Red Streak and the Water Clan, born for the Bitterwater people. So ITEP began almost 30 years ago with a gentleman named Virgil Masaizwa, the first director, and he met with Hopi elders in his community, which is about 90 miles due northeast of Flagstaff. And so, like I said, the Hopi tribe also considers San Francisco Peaks as sacred, and it was being impeded by, well, the air quality in that region was really getting bad, so in this region. And so Virgil Masaizwa went to our co-founder, Bill Auberly, who also sits on our board, and they founded ITEP almost 30 years ago on an air quality program. And throughout the last 30 years, we've built it into, and Cal Cicio was the next director, and then I was the next director. So there was three different directors so far, and that's how we began. And what we our premise of all of our teachings have been to listen to tribes and also to build capacity using their knowledge, their culture, and protecting their sovereignty. So those are all things that we really work on. And it's gone from an air program to an international program, because we have air quality, water quality, solid waste, that's all your trash. We have an environmental program for students, and of course we have the climate change program, and we have a great policy program. So we're now moving, and we've served over, in the last 30 years, we've served over 95% of all the 574 tribes throughout the country. So that's it in a nutshell.
Okay, that was a very efficient use of the time there. I appreciate that. The STAC report, though, was the very first of its kind, I understand. And so what was the starting point and how long ago?
So, yes, the STAC report came about after we work with different tribal partnership groups. So we also work with the National Tribal Air Association. And the National Tribe, the NTAA, puts out what's called the STAR report, the State of Tribes and Air Report, STAR report. And so that report was the premise for the STAC report. It takes a yearly glimpse at what's happening nationally with tribes and air quality. They look at it region by region, because the Environmental Protection Agency splits the country up into 10 regions, so it goes region by region and really looks at what tribes are doing in each region. So a couple of years ago, we've been, program that we oversee, the climate change program we oversee, is funded by the Bureau of Indian Affairs, and Rachel Novak is our project officer. So I sat down, we all sat down with her, and we basically said, this is an important document, because what I was seeing, and I go to a lot of national meetings, is I saw that we were not, many times people will say, or the folks would say, we don't have the data. We don't know what tribes want. We don't understand where they're coming from. So I, one of the things I basically said, let's answer that question. So nobody can pretend but just not understand what we're doing and try to move forward without asking us. And so many of these programs that come out, but they were not tailored to each individual tribe. So this report specifically looks at tribes in each region and says, okay, what are you doing on the ground and where do you need help? So the recommendations come specifically from them, so it's amplified. So now my hope, my conversation is when I go back to these national meetings and I say, okay, this is we've answered your question, so please fund appropriately or, you know, assist appropriately. So that's how it really came to be. It was really a need coming out of Indian country.
Mm-hmm. All right, so nobody gets to say, hey, we don't know what your needs are anymore, because they're right there in front of them with the STAC report.
Perfect. Yep, that's it.
Anne Marie Chischilly, one of our guests on the Jefferson Exchange, the director of the Institute for Tribal Environmental Professionals, which recently put out the STAC report, Status of Tribes and Climate Change. Karen Cossetta was with us as well, the co-manager of the ITEP unit on tribes and climate change. You can join the conversation on the exchange. Your questions, your comments are welcome at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Karen Cossetta, did we begin with an assumption that Indigenous people are more vulnerable to climate change?
Yeah, they're one of the groups that are on the front lines of climate change because of their spiritual, cultural, and subsistence practices, and also because of historical legacies like colonialism and things like that.
Mm-hmm. There's a major piece up front about tribal sovereignty. Up to this point, how much input has been sought from tribes on issues like resource use and other areas that impact climate change?
Yeah, climate change is an interesting topic because there's no one agency that necessarily focuses on it on the federal level and seeks input. And so that's one role that we're hoping to help address. And the National Congress on American Indians also has a climate change task force. So there are different groups out there within Indian country addressing this. But it is a gap in terms of knowledge.
And it's not just the input, but, you know, you're talking in the report about co-management of natural resources. Are there some examples of this out there already?
Yeah, the 1854 Treaty Authority co-manages some of the off-reservation treaty resources. So that's one example of co-management.
Mm-hmm. And Anne Marie Chischilly, tech or traditional environmental knowledge, we've been talking about it a fair amount because we have tribes in our region restoring things like cultural burning. And I just wonder if you think the respect for it might have turned a corner.
Yes, it has, thankfully. In 2015, I sat on the first advisory committee. This is under the Obama administration and Sally Jewell's reign at Department of Interior. And that was the first advisor, a FAC, Federal Advisory Committee. And Dr. Gary Morishima and myself out of the Quinault Nation really took that topic to that advisory committee, all your top scientists, and they basically put it back on us and said, well, you define it. You put out some guidelines. And so we met up with 20 amazing experts throughout the country, and we put together what's called the Guidelines for the Use of Traditional Knowledges in climate change initiatives. So we submitted that as official recommendations and they were approved. So anyone in the USGS enterprise, you know, their guidelines to use. And then it's been moving, you know, EPA under the Office of Waste Management, they also put one out under Matty Stenensoff when he was there. And then also the National Advisory Committee and the General Advisory Committee called the NACGAC under the EPA, who oversees not only national but international issues, they have a traditional elders roster. So it is growing to the point where people are understanding it, and it's becoming much more understood throughout not only the United States but internationally at the UN, the United Nations level. They're putting out a new treaty protocols for protection of traditional knowledges or indigenous knowledges, however you want to say it. So it's important to understand that tribes, you know, have been living on these lands from millennium. And so understanding the way they have protected and the way they have lived in balance for the most part with the land is important.
We are talking about the new Status of Tribes and Climate Change, or STACC, report put out by the Institute for Tribal Environmental Professionals. Anne-Marie Cicilli is the director of ITEP. Karen Cazzetto is the co-manager of ITEP's Unit on Tribes and Climate Change. You're welcome to join our conversation with our guests here on The Exchange at 800-838-3760, 800-838-3760 by phone, by email jx@jeffnet.org. One of the points in the report, Karen Cazzetto, is funding for adaptation. You're seeking at least $6.2 billion over 50 years for tribal infrastructure. Can you provide some examples of what kinds of adaptations we're talking about?
Sure. So many tribes in Alaska and also in coastal regions, such as Oregon and Washington and also coastal Louisiana, are facing vast amounts of erosion due to things like sea level rise, increasing storm surges, and or permafrost thaw. And so these communities may be facing situations in which they have to move buildings, move them within their community to anything. And some communities are also facing relocation, where they're relocating their entire community to a new location. So that obviously involves a lot of different pieces, both infrastructure and also trying to keep the communities intact if they do have to relocate.
Has that happened much, the relocation process, or is it being considered in more places than it's already happened?
Yeah, it's being considered, and there are two of the big examples are Ile de Jean Charles and also Mertavik. So they're kind of on the leading edge of this, and there are a lot of different needs associated with this. And one of the big recommendations of the report is to have a lead federal agency that coordinating all these efforts, because right now tribes are faced with the huge challenge of trying to navigate, you know, multiple programs, multiple agencies, trying to get support for it in a very challenging situation.
Yeah, as Anne-Marie mentioned, there is no one agency responsible for climate change. But in addition to asking for some more streamlining, I mean, is there an overall vision here in the STACC report of more responsibility and work done by the tribes over time, therefore somewhat less by the federal agencies?
Yeah, that's definitely a key message with tribal sovereignty, is having tribally-led, you know, tribally identified needs, tribally-led solutions, and providing support for tribes to take the lead on adapting, like on their own adaptation, and leading those efforts rather than having them directed by someone else.
So, Anne-Marie Cicilli, talk about science from the tribes. I mean, how much has ITEP grown over the 30 years it's been in existence? I mean, how many more people are eligible to be members? How robust a system of tribal environmental professionals?
So, I don't know what you mean by members, but ITEP does not have a membership. So we serve all tribes throughout the nation, and we also have helped tribal professionals. So if you work for a tribe, whether you're a director or a manager or you're working as a tribal leader, it doesn't matter. If you're working for a tribe, we're going to support you. If you sign up for any of our free courses, we're not all online, but normally we would go out into in-person events and we would train, and we've been doing that for 30 years. So there's no membership. Mm-hmm. But the amount of people that have grown throughout the years and that ITEP has been able to support has significantly increased. One of the issues that we have is high turnover in Indian country, and that's by many, many different things, varieties. But we always keep our 101 courses and our 102 courses so that the new people coming in have courses available. And also we have, when we go out to Indian country, we try to do it on Indian land so that we have elders, we have tribal professionals who can train us as well, and we can also tour what's happening in Indian country on the ground. So it's very, and then we, in those 3 or 4 days that they're in a course, they really develop a mentorship between themselves so that they're able by region to support one another. And that's really helpful in the climate change adaptation world, where you're seeing a lot of issues in the region that are similar so that you can help one another develop and implement programs that will help individual tribes.
All right. So programs within tribes is one thing, but when you try to go a bit bigger, I mean, is there still some resistance from federal bureaucracy or political figures or denigration of science from tribes?
I'm not sure if I would say there's a denigration. I would say that the federal agencies that I've worked with are all trying to learn what traditional knowledge and science and the interlink between those two and how they work. So I would say the partners, the EPA, the Bureau of Indian Affairs, the USGS, all these partners are learning, and I really appreciate their assistance. So I would not say that.
All right. We're talking once again about the status of tribes and climate change report, STAC report, put out just a few weeks ago by the Institute for Tribal Environmental Professionals, where Anne-Marie Cicilli is the director. Karen Cazzetto is the co-manager of the Unit on Tribes and Climate Change within ITEP. And you are welcome to join us on the exchange as we explore some of the issues raised in the report and with climate change facing indigenous peoples across the United States. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email jx@jeffnet.org. Karen, there's a particular part of the report that focuses on trying to integrate holistic responses in line with tribal values, the stress being on the interconnectedness of systems. And just as we were talking about trying to figure out which federal agency has jurisdiction, is there often a fragmented approach then to correcting the effects of climate change or addressing the impacts?
Yes, in Western culture, there can definitely be a fragmented approach, and I think that's one of a big power of Indigenous perspectives on how to approach climate change is viewing things in that more holistic and interconnected way. And I think a great I think a great example of this is, there's some discussion of invasive species in the ecosystems and biodiversity chapter, and it's really interesting. There's different ways that tribes approach invasive species, but one of them is can be treating them not necessarily automatically as invaders, but is approaching them as nations and trying to consider what types of relationships and responsibilities may arise. So, it may often start with observation of, what is this species doing, and what kind of relationship can we have with the species? And obviously sometimes invasive species are really detrimental, but I think the power of that kind of approach is that as we have a shift in climate and we're going to have new species interactions and new ecological communities, this more holistic approach and this approach where you think about relationality and responsibility and reciprocity can really have a lot of power in this changing world that we're in.
We touched a little bit about some traditional practices that can help with effects of climate change. Cultural burning is we touched on a bit, but I want to ask about the clam gardens. They are mentioned in here for coastal areas, and what are those?
Yeah, so clam gardens are a traditional practice, and they're kind of these low rock walls, is my understanding, and they help increase clam productivity, and they can also address ocean acidification. And I'm not sure of the exact mechanism, but there've been some studies, and the Swinomish Indian tribal community is trying to work on clam gardens in the Pacific Northwest, and there's also some First Nations in British Columbia working on reintroducing and reestablishing traditional clam gardens.
Mm-hmm. Anne-Marie, the report also recommends support for tribes' just transition away from fossil fuels. Just in what sense?
So the just transition looks at how the current energy enterprise, the way we deal with energy, and how it impacts tribes. So one of the issues, some of the tribes are fossil fuel based. So really taking a look at that and helping them in significant ways make that transition into more renewable and sustainable life ways, so that, it's not an abrupt change where all the socioeconomic issues, like if you're a coal miner and you lose your job, it's going to impact your entire, not only your family, but many times you're supporting two or three families. So really taking into consideration how that transition is moved and how tribes need more support, I would say, and how do you culturally do that, so it's appropriately supports each tribe.
So there are, in fact, portions of the report about economic development, but also clearly from what you're saying, also about the impacts on individuals economically.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I think I'm from the Navajo Nation, and that was seen very evidently, I guess you can say, with the Navajo generating station coming down.
Mm-hmm.
And so when that was closing, you know, many, many families and many families that I knew were impacted. And so really taking a look at how you develop a new economic system so that communities will continue to thrive and so they're not leaving these traditional homelands or reservations and so in search of jobs and then breaking up families. So those are things that whole just transition really needs to take a look at.
And in those two examples, the Hopi coal mine and the Dene power plant, were there programs that came to rise that took care of the people involved, or is it still a bit of a struggle to find ways to connect people to the meaningful work again?
I would say the latter.
Yeah, still a struggle.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you go from here? Where do you take the STAC report? Who got copies of it, and who was giving you feedback on it?
That's a great question. So we've been doing a lot of marketing, actually, in Climate Week this week, and that's happening in the United in New York City. Sorry, the United Nations is also happening, but also there we have a group of our colleagues who are presenting it there as well. We have it. You know, we've sent it out to all our colleagues, both here nationally and internationally. And you know, for me, I sit on several advisory boards, and so I'm presenting it to them as well. So it's going out, and mostly it's an educational tool right now, but one of our colleagues, the co-manager, Nikki Cooley, was able to present it to one of the, at a Senate hearing a couple, maybe last month, I think that's when it was.
Okay.
So, and then the IPCC has also asked to use it to cite to it. So this is a huge report going out, not only here in the United States, but internationally as well,
okay,
because it's a basis and it's directly from the tribes, which
okay.
is the most vital point.